Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I'm Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 122. 122.
Somehow they let us go this language. Far. That's how you know we're independent, because no one would allow this.
It's very true.
And by this, I mean me. I've been bad.
5 minute major for boarding. So we've got much music. Many songs. We've got Everyday Life from Coldplay. Did they sell out? Did they not sell out?
That's going to be a really... If you listen to the Coldplay bonus episode, you understood where Sean came down on that.
This is going to be a good...
This is an interesting episode.
Yes. We've got Hyperspace by everybody's favorite Scientologist, Beck.
Which we also kind of left on a cliff note. A cliffhanger, by the way.
Exactly. And we have Imagination and the Misfit Kid by Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And that's the musica. We got some news and some high hopes, and yeah, let's do it.
No singles, but can we just mention next week we are for Thanksgiving. Oh, yeah. There's not a lot of releases over Thanksgiving.
And
anyways.
We need a break. I need a break.
However,
my ears need breaks.
There is going to be an Audio Face episode. I recorded a bonus episode with one of my good friends, Gigi, and she is going to kind of walk us through the music of Eastern Europe, and that's going to be kind of amazing, kind of contemporary, kind of stuff that Sean hates, like Croatian dubstep. But like,
dude,
that's okay.
There's good. You see European music, some of it goes wild. I'm like, okay, what's this? And some of it's good.
Hey, we give you a little bit of everything.
Audio, exactly.
Right? Because we do have listeners in Europe and in Eastern Europe. So shout out to y'all. But we're going to have that as an episode next week. So you still have like an episode. And then after that, we have the court packing episode where we go through, for those of the new listeners, of which there are many new listeners, the court packing episode we do once a year. And it's actually a mostly good episode, because in addition to reviewing one or two albums that come out and like some late entries, we're going to talk about
music that we didn't get to talk
music
about.
Music that we didn't get to the whole year that we can technically mention on Audio Face, because in order to possibly mention it in the Audio Face Awards, it has to have been talked about during the year.
Exactly.
The rules that we made. Let's get into it.
So the worst song ever on God's green earth is High Hopes by Panic at the Disco.
Yeah,
and everybody's least favorite Democratic nominee, Pete Buttigieg.
The billionaire's favorite.
The billionaire's corporatist favorite, Pete Buttigieg, who I swear to God is just a
Bezos
robot.
Choice.
Is he really?
Actually, no, that's Bloomberg, my bad.
I would have said that'd be more Bloomberg.
Yeah.
But anyways, so all of his fans and campaign peoples do this the worst dance ever. To the worst song ever, High Hopes. And Dan, I don't know if you can put it in the video. If
yes,
you're back,
I can. Okay. I'll have it playing
please,
like, under here.
Because they need to see this and they need to feel my own pain and wrath.
First of all, really quickly, High Hopes is a song by Panic at the Disco. And they made this song a while ago, and Pete Buttigieg, the Democratic candidate, is now like using it as like campaign song.
Yeah, they made it 2 years ago, and it made me want to, you know, gouge my ears out with a screwdriver.
And this is like the worst Fortnite dance of 2019 for sure. Like,
and it's all a bunch of like people in their 40s. Doing
and
it.
They're all
white people, naturally.
White.
They're all like super white people.
Incredibly.
But this
white.
is the worst thing to come out of the year in 2019 so far. There's, you know, there's wildfires, there's some space mishaps, there's Tesla truck unveilings and windows breaking, and then there's High Hopes.
Right, yeah, this is kind of terrible. I think there's one, because there are a bunch of videos from this, and there's been some kind of fallout. Pete Buttigieg is not apologizing for it. I think my favorite is Matt Bevin's tweet, even though I kind of hate Matt Bevin as a person. He said that Trump is going to be president for 100 years attached to a video of Pete's people doing the High Hopes thing. So yeah, that sucks. Meanwhile, back at the serious people's corner of politics, Ariana Grande has endorsed Bernie Sanders. This is a temporary penalty for you.
I'm not allowed. I'm still banned from talking about her.
Unlike Biden, who would have taken that hypothetical endorsement as an opportunity to be really creepy, honestly, like, Bernie looks incredibly happy to be with Ariana Grande, and Ariana Grande looks incredibly happy to be with Bernie Sanders in, like, a familial kind of way. It's a really nice picture that I can also just include here for the video. Sick. Check out Audio Face on video when we do, like, little Instagram things on, like, at Audio Face Pod and stuff, because that's really cool. But please, for Christ's sake, we're getting close to the end of the primaries now. So hashtag no politics, vote Bernie.
Yep. So everybody's favorite crazy kooky Christian Kanye West. Apparently he's gonna make Jesus is King Part 2 with Dr. Dre. The Jesus in him.
Oh god. Yeah, so
I don't know how, yeah. Oh god. Apparently because he's supposed to release another album on the 25th of December, also known as Jesus' fake birthday, because he was definitely born in summer. Opposed to pagan spring holiday. But anyways,
he's also black.
He was also super black. And Arab as hell. Anyways, so he's supposed to do that, and now he says that he's going to be making Jesus is King Part 2.
This is after his Christmas Day gospel album, which is supposed to be more gospel-y than the current one, and then he's also going to, like...
To be fair, it wasn't super gospel-y.
There were bits.
There was bits, but it wasn't a straight... Theme, yeah, but it wasn't exactly, like, but it wasn't, like, yeah, straight pure gospel.
That's true.
Because there's two songs in there, I was like, okay, I could see the old Kanye back, but then he drank the Kool-Aid, so there's that.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's also the greatest artist that God has ever credited at Joel Osteen's service. I mean, what is
created?
He, created. Thank you for correcting my English. What does he think? He's John Lennon? We're bigger than Jesus?
No, like, this was a thing that...
is he trying to one-up John Lennon here? I'm down, fuck it.
This is a thing that Annie and I actually talked about on the Kanye West episode that we did most recently, a couple episodes back, where we were like, in our portion of it, basically saying that Kanye West hasn't had a come to Jesus moment as much as he relates to God so much, having compared himself to a God, that he's just like aligning himself with that, partially to save face as a career thing, but also like he thinks he's a God, which is funny because God made mistakes, so does Kanye. There's an opera poster, by the way, in between all of this, he's releasing an opera on Tidal, I believe, next week over Thanksgiving. It's called Nebuchadnezzar. It's called that? Nebuchadnezzar. And unfortunately, on the original poster for it, he included the wrong emperor. So instead of the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar, he included the Persian emperor, Darius the Great, on the cover of it.
Was he a Persian separatist?
It sounds like he's a Persian cultural appropriator at this point, if he's using the poster. But no, not really. And then... Oh, lastly, meanwhile at Kanye developments in Wyoming.
Oh, Lord God.
Wyoming officials have ordered Kanye West to halt the construction on his ranch, saying that he does not have a construction permit. Because he was going to... So here's the thing. Originally, his Monster Lake, Wyoming ranches were constructed without a permit. Once he submitted the application, it was going to be a 70,000 square foot amphitheater to be used as a meditation space. Then he wanted to change the permit for residential use, allegedly having homeless people there, but then probably not because...
Hell no. He's like, hey, you want a t-shirt? That's $800, please.
Right. So Kanye West, still incredibly normal.
Cause... I'm surprised Kanye West isn't Catholic for how much of a profit he makes.
Talk about false profit on this one.
It's a false profit. Go watch There Will Be Blood to understand that reference.
I mean, any... There's a many. Anyways,
there's many on there. So, but let's go to Coldplay, Everyday Life. It is 16 songs, 52 minutes long. I didn't realize that this is technically a double album.
It says?
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, because it doesn't really show you that on Spotify Mobile. It only shows you that
We're going mobile.
It only shows you that. Yeah. But, like, 52 minutes is perfectly acceptable for an album.
I will say that
it feels like, doesn't feel like there's a point where it
really
stops.
Doesn't feel like a double, and I don't know why they put that as a double. That's strange, but okay. Anyways, if you listen to the sold out podcast called the Coldplay bonus episode, you know my deep disdain with their past three albums. Basically, anything they've made 2010 onwards, because Chris Martin featured on Kanye West's song before too, so there's that. But anyways, so
and the main reasoning to sum up is that like around a little bit
Milo Xylo time, is 2011. That's when they just went poppy and
main reasoning being that Chris Martin was kind of trying to seek fame
more on this
and wanted to do that, and so he took a really like weird shift toward not weird but like. It was like, yeah, it was a good shift is a good word, but like it went a shift towards pop, which was different than what Coldplay was doing. And it's totally fine, but it was definitely like not reaching their potential as a band.
And now they completely 180'd from pop and made a very good alternative rock album or alternative album.
Which, plot twist.
I'm like, holy fuck, they actually made good music. I was just listening to it. Every song kept going. You're going, like, wow. You listen. Coldplay, this is Audio Face.
maybe they heard our episode
and just made songs in 3 days and released it as Everyday Life.
I mean, they had the singles done already.
That's true. So, okay, I'll just get, you know, let's go. So, Sunrise is just a little interlude of a just string.
It's like a string interlude,
which they've done before on like Viva La Vida. And I fucks with it whenever they do string interludes and stuff. They also listen to Audio Face or listen to Sean Audio Face because I always say Make Piano Great Again. And this album has hella piano in it.
I mean,
and I love it.
To that point around instrumentation, Coldplay has never strayed too much in instrumentation. They've stayed to like guitar, bass, drums, synths, piano, definitely. But a lot more synths going later on. And occasionally some like flair instruments.
Yeah, but this is definitely stripped back a bit and it's way more experimental throughout the whole album. The song Church that comes right after Sunrise feels like a good, solid Coldplay song. Like something they would make a decade previous. But up to date. It doesn't feel outdated at all. And I go, oh, wow, okay. Church is good. Don't really like the lyrics. But the instrumentation, the musicality of it, fantastic.
And so the song kind of, like, it starts to give me a vibe of Everyday Robots, actually, from Damon Albarn. Because it's like... You're in the streets somewhere, you're kind of being yelled at in a certain way because it has that interlude at the end. It's like you're supposed to feel the environment of a very like social sort of town where you're like in the middle of the bustle of it, maybe like headed to.
Yeah, and then like Trouble in Town has a little thing where cops are yelling at each other or yelling at somebody in there. I'm like, whoa, this is kind of getting a little out there.
Well, I'll grab you any way I got to. You're not protecting me, but I'm stopping me a long time for the work. Why don't you shut up?
But Trouble in Town for me was the first time, like, I was like, okay, I'm a little bit pleasantly surprised once getting to Church, which is like the first quote-unquote song of the album, second song if you're looking at it. But like, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty
Trouble
solid.
Trouble in Town is good, And you know, our whole thing of if you can make a political stance, actually know what you're talking about, I'm going to do a good thing. And we thought Coldplay were going to be doing the opposite and do the Lana Del Rey route of just whining. They didn't do that at all. Yeah. All of their stuff was in there, which they used to do, and I'm like, wow, they went reverted back to what they were good at.
Yeah, and even
so in Trouble in Town does that, where that starts to do it, and then Broken right after that is this weird gospel thing that's just Chris Martin on a piano, and it's like Chris Martin has black friends. Pretty much is how I did that. Daddy is a very, very good track. It's that's just
single quality.
Yeah,
it's very slow.
Slow. It builds. It has a lot of emotion in it.
Daddy, won't you come and play? Daddy, do you not care? Is there nothing that you wanna say? I know.
WTW is just a little interlude track. Arabesque, which is the other single, fits into this album.
Yeah.
I understand the singles. Because when I had the singles before, Arabesque, I was like, this isn't bad, but it's okay. And Orphans, I did not like at all.
And it existed in the context of a band that, like, you'd seen gone this certain direction. And so you're assuming, like, okay,
I heard the context of that. Every song's going to be like this. Literally the only poppy song on the entire album was Orphans.
Orphans, yeah.
That's it. And I go, okay. And it fit perfectly in the album right after Guns, which Guns goes hard in a way.
Yeah. It's like Orphans is like them paying their taxes to Warner Music. Just like, okay, pretty much here's like your poppy song.
But now I don't hate Orphans at all. I can actually listen to that song and be like, okay, I can fucks with this song. Because in the context of the album, it makes sense. You have the sixth song on the double album, so the second to last song, it's whatever.
Wait, really, really fast, because we skipped a couple.
Because
right around Cry is actually when I start to really, really love this
project. Cry is fantastic.
Really sold by it. And then
Old Friends is good.
Right above it, so the translation of it, it's in Arabic, but it means Children of Adam. And
what are they doing? Is he playing Fallout from New Vegas? Or sorry, Fallout 4 with his Children of Adam?
Chill, my asshole. So like, here's the thing. It's inspired by like a Persian poem that roughly like reads, humans are inherent parts of one body and are from the same valuable essence in their creation. When the conditions of the time hurt one of these parts, other parts will be disturbed. If you're indifferent about the misery of others, it may not be appropriate to call you human.
So that song, the first half of the song is just piano. There's nothing else. It's just like a prelude. And then it gets into, it's, I described the song, Yes, from Viva La Vida, where it's two songs in one. And it's probably my favorite Coldplay song. This is like that, but it has a minute and a half of piano and then 2 minutes of, or 3 minutes of, it's just instrumentation with a backing vocal of a woman's voice doing stuff in Arabic.
Yeah,
and it's beautiful.
And it's like,
fan-fucking-tastic.
So there's a lot of ways, a comment I made, I think, in the Coldplay bonus episode was that like, there's a lot of ways where pop outfits, especially from colonized countries like England, as Coldplay is, can do a, certain way of approaching music from other countries where they kind of appropriate
exactly.
it. And this is not that.
No, not
Damon
at all.
Albarn, for all the he has black friends jokes I make about him, he does a pretty good job of like, respecting the cultures, partially by just kind of like bringing people from the culture to perform.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like the what was it, the Dylan Francis of I'm gonna make an album in Spanish now.
Oh my god, that thing was fucking awful. So, and they did that, they brought people in to really do it. And I was, because I was worried about it, where I thought this would just be one of those giant star fucks when you bring people in or whatever, but it's not, because on that song, you can't hear Chris Martin at all. It's just the backing vocals of the woman, the female voice, and it is very good. I'm shocked at this. Honestly, I did did not expect them to be good again, and you have no idea how happy this makes me.
Yeah,
like I'm saying,
I'm gonna want to listen to this album again.
10 years, I've been Coldplay is breaking my heart over and over and over again. I'm like, please stop. When I got home from doing some other things, I legit just put on Orphans Down, and I just kept listening to that over and over again, waiting for him to set up for the podcast.
Well, once it ends, it's great. Like even the title track, Everyday Life, which
I
would have expected title alone, knowing it's a Coldplay album.
Yeah, I would be like, fuck, this is a poppy crap song. No.
Yeah.
Wow, they fucking 180'd. So
I'm incredibly impressed.
Yeah,
I really am.
Seriously, Jesus Christ. They made I really don't want to listen to this album to low-key album of the year contender because of it's that good.
Yeah, so
the arbitrary scale
this week, because this is Audio Face, we don't abide to the normal ranking systems, which are bullshit anyways. We're just transparent with you. The arbitrary scale this week is Cybertruck windows. So Tesla released their Cybertruck, and as promised, Elon Musk showed off these shatterproof windows that quickly shattered. So
two hits.
Assuming there are about six windows on the Cybertruck, the front windshield,
front rear windshield, passenger side, passenger
two windows,
two windows, side two windows.
Yes.
This is a solid. Like you grabbed a sledgehammer and you just broke the entire truck. Like you just
breaking the truck is good.
Because you just
okay. First of all, let's adjust this.
Okay,
how do you say it? The parts of the truck that are intact after the thing are good because they took a sledgehammer to the doors and that's fine.
Yeah.
So I would say, and this is Cybertruck windows. So of the windows on the car?
So more windows broken is bad. Good.
Broken is bad.
Broken is bad.
Okay, Michael Bloomberg. Broken windows is bad. We're not going to do anything about it.
Usually we do the opposite, where it's like we want more broken windows because it's more pain for Elon. So, but that's fine.
Broken windows is also pain for the bankers. Okay, let's think about this. Actually,
but that's what I'm saying.
Okay, broken windows.
That's what I'm saying. Broken windows are good. So this car doesn't have any more windows. It's just when you're driving. You know when you're playing Grand Theft Auto.
No,
right?
This album is when you're driving. You're playing Daddy, and then the windows start breaking.
So you know when you're Grand Theft Auto, right? And you throw a sticky bomb. And you go. That's just every song that just keeps hitting. It's just one window, 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 and now you're just like, I don't have no windows. That's this album.
Coldplay really did a good job
I'm
here.
I'm shocked.
I would recommend listening to this album. It's got something for people who have been fans of Coldplay for a long time, 100%, for sure.
100%.
And people who really like just their pop hits should listen to this for a really like kind of deep album that, by the way, has really big influences and meanings behind like immigration and acceptance of people, obviously, that are in that, mm-hmm. that aren't really hit you over the head with it. And
no,
I'm surprised, I'm genuinely surprised that Coldplay pulled off this album. This shows a lot of growth.
Seriously.
I'm impressed. By the way, speaking of growth.
How many windows for you?
Go ahead.
I said, how many windows for you?
Oh, windows for me?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
Like, you all just did all the windows.
Yeah.
So this is something that I sent down that's interesting. Coldplay are not going to tour again until it's environmentally beneficial. So what they're trying to figure out a way to go on tour without burning fossil fuels to where basically where they're trying to be as environmentally conscious as possible. And my whole thing is with environmentally conscious people, I always say they're hypocrites because I'm like, unless you're vegetarian or vegan, you're really not doing much. But then I looked on Coldplay's Instagram and they're doing Meatless Mondays and saying this is the anniversary of Meatless Mondays and more people need to do it to have spread the awareness of the environment. And I was like, fuck me.
And to be fair, like they are incredibly unethically things that many people do. Like I'm wearing currently a lot of like fashion brands clothing and I currently watch the Patriot Act with Hasan Minhaj episode about that. So like that's bad and not environmentally conscious. So like there's a lot that's like around it basically.
Yeah.
However, when it comes to the context of that, by the way, I mentioned that to say like everyone kind of participates in it and individual aspects or individual movements towards making things environmentally more friendly are good, but ultimately the dismantling of capitalism and the reforming of it into an economy that sustains the environment and doesn't completely destroy it is really the only way forward. Green New Deal, hashtag no politics. So with Coldplay, they're not going to tour this album because the air travel alone would be disastrous. The car travel alone would be pretty bad.
Hey, I'll fly you though.
Yeah. Recently, a number of other prominent musicians, including Tom York, David Byrne and Brian Eno signed an open letter calling on the world's governments to address the ongoing climate crisis on accepting their own hypocrisy, which I thought was really interesting.
That's why Tom York's been vegan for like 30 years, too.
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting because there was a BBC article that was like a little bit critical of the 1975, for example. They're doing a thing where they're trying to be environmentally conscious. They got Greta Thunberg on one of their songs. And they're reselling their shirts. They're redoing them.
Yeah, they don't make plastic things for any of their album works and whatnot. They've done a lot of different things to where they're they basically don't make new shirts.
Yeah,
more or less, and other stuff too.
However, they are still touring, for example, which would be the thing that they are doing that contributes the most to CO2. So I think it's just a really interesting thing. I'm not saying like any necessarily band is bad for that. I think they're all bad equally because like everyone's touring. Also, when you think of bands, touring is one of the few ways that bands really make a lot of money
and
now.
That's their job. So.
I mean, yeah. So like it's kind of difficult. And concerts are great experiences. I love concerts. And unfortunately, you gotta fly a lot of fossil fuel burning planes in order to make those concerts happen.
I
so,
mean, I gotta pay my bills. So
like I said, it's all about this thing where like we all understand that everything we do kind of contributes to climate change and the overall rehauling of our economy is going to be the thing that really affects it and changes it. Anyway, speaking of moral posturing, we go to Gorillaz because we get to be indulgent a little bit in this podcast sometimes to my favorite band and our favorite bands. They announced a new documentary called Reject False Icons. This is supposed to be like the continuation of like sort of chronicles the documentary
Humans onwards, pretty much.
And Gorillaz have done this quite often before.
Yeah, they've always done little documentaries. Like they did one for Demon Days,
they've done one
from their first album, stuff like that, to where they kind of explain what they've done and everything. But to me, I'm like, all right, there's going to be the first half is just, this is way too many people on stage. The second half is like, all right, this is good.
Yeah. And also, while Humans was like very overwhelming as an album, I think live it was really good.
Oh, it was fun as hell. Yeah. It's just literally at some point, I'm like, I don't know who these people are on stage because goddamn, there's way too many humans. But
like Gorillaz by like, by Demon Days. It was the same, like, many number of people on stage, but they're all silhouettes, remember?
Exactly, it was all silhouettes, and it made more sense of how they did that. That was my problem with Humans, but I still fucked with it. I still like the album.
My point being that, like, yeah, there's a lot of people on stage anyways, but, like, that's kind of just, like, what Gorillaz is as a project. There's just a couple things I want to mention about this really quickly, though. So, they've done little documentaries like this. They also did a big one called Bananas that goes into the gorilla's lore. They also did the book Rise of the Ogre that goes into the gorilla's lore. There's a bunch of stuff that just like kind of explains and does all this stuff.
Yeah, because that's really cool. They made their own characters, so there's a whole little backstory to them.
And Reject False Icons is a callback to the music video Rocket, which were that sort of like iconography was flashing through it. The idea that you shouldn't respect celebrities. You can like what they do. You can enjoy their music, let's say. But these are people just like anyone else, and they're prone to flaws and mistakes. And this is something like I, as a like young kid, really took to heart. I have that same view towards politicians and celebrities and musicians. And I think that's made me like a better person at critiquing all of these things. So it'll be interesting to see if the album or if the documentary plays with that motif, or if it's just like a name callback thing.
Or
because arguably gorillas are the icons now. So
Or as Tom York says, no more idiots in charge.
Right. And then an update really quickly.
Oops.
Yes.
Scooter Braun, he shares an open letter to Taylor Swift and claims his family has received numerous death threats.
Yeah, so as we talked on the last episode of Audio Face. And
people gotta chill, man.
Yeah.
People really gotta chill.
Taylor Swift is in this back and forth.
Taylor Swift stands are vicious.
She's in this back and forth with Scooter Braun and there's other people who own the first like 6 years of her discography.
Yeah, where she's like, I'm being held hostage for my music.
They're saying there are things that are preventing her from performing it live, her music, or music from that time period live or in documentaries, which she's trying to do. But Scooter Braun responded kind of saying like, since your public statement directing her fans to say to him how they feel about it, there have been threats against his family. I understand your intention, but I hope we can meet again to resolve this. Is kind of the gist of what he said in the post on Instagram. So it's getting to the social media notes category.
Yeah,
of petty.
That's how you know. That's how you know if you put notes on Instagram or Twitter and you just like have a bunch of things of just the notes you wrote in that. That's like someone's got salty.
The single best thing Apple has ever done, the Notes app and screenshots.
And screenshots, right?
That's it.
Seriously.
Which neither of which they invented, but like those two things have become ubiquitous for like laying down the law.
Right.
Also, by the way, if you're listening to this far into the podcast, great, cool podcast work. Make sure you're following us at AudioFacePod on Twitter and Instagram, where you'll see the stuffings and musings that we're doing. And also shout out to We Made a Podcast. They're cool folks. They do a really badass soccer podcast. Even if you're not into soccer or sports and stuff, they do about it.
They're just good.
You can listen to their best of episodes, and you can see how it goes into like the culture of sports, just like we do the culture of music. Anyways, speaking of music and culture, a mainstay in music culture for the past 25 years now, basically, Beck.
Yes,
has released
Beck.
His umpteenth album.
So, Hyperspace. It is 11 songs, 39 minutes long.
So, to also preface this, in our Beck bonus episode that we did recently, I think the most interesting tidbit that I found out of that, that we talked about, how we said that his last album would probably be his last good album.
Because it's one of those things where you need to go on a hiatus and just really just... Because of how much music you're releasing, because you can only release a certain amount of music that's good, pretty much. Almost everybody has a half-life, unless, I mean, there's very few.
Or like the idea is you can only release a certain amount of music that's good in a short amount of time before you just start making stuff that's too repetitious.
Exactly.
Because new music creation and ideation
takes
a long time and requires like going through different experiences, honestly, because it's an art.
Exactly.
You can't like make the same art. The artist has to really like, whether it's a comedian or an actor or whatever has to go through different experiences in their life and different moments in order to develop their craft. Anyways, but yeah,
I want you to go first on this because I'm honestly interested to hear what you say about this.
Sure. So, I had a similar but not as strong reaction to this album as we did with Coldplay, in that this is better than I expected, significantly better than I expected. It starts with Hyperlife, which is like a really kind of short intro thing, and then Uneventful Days is like kind of a thing that only Beck can do that also harkens back to the Information, which really
it's
like kind
super
of deep
information-y
kind of thing.
This album reminded me big time of Information.
Yeah,
and it's just like a really good callback.
It's a really like welcoming sort of like embrace for me because it's like
Information goes hard. It's one of my favorite albums ever.
I knew Saw Lightning was like the third song after and that's like very different from like even the Information. It's kind of like a harken back to Wero Beck even.
It's
twangy, fun.
It's almost
really
like Morning Phase-ish too.
Sunlight is not like Morning Phase at all because it's fast.
But I'm saying it's in that acoustic-ish range of Beck. That's
sure,
what I was going to go into that.
But like it's
I'd
say it's just like the acoustic hook with the strumming.
Yeah.
And then, so those three songs, like, okay, pretty good if you're a Beck fan, if you're a Beck fan, mm-hmm. those are like really good to get you into. And then we start with Die Waiting, which kind of just takes like a deeper sort of turn for Beck as well. And I was like, okay, this man yeah. still, old dog still got new tricks. And then we got to Chemical, which is, might be one of my favorite tracks of the year.
It's
honestly.
A very good track. Chemical is, so with me, this album, I like Saw Lightning, Hyperlife, Uneventful Days, and Die Waiting. I could listen back, this sounds like Beck, good Beck, but nothing like out of craziness, so I can kind of pass through. And then Chemical comes on, the same thing. I go, whoa, this is a very, very good track.
Change and everything to know when I would leave and feel when I'm free. You found love, just a fantasy, beautiful and lovely as a life could be. And I don't lose any sleep, honestly. Whoa, 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 whoa.
I love that. I had to stop and like make sure, so I looked at them like, okay, this is Chemical, and then play it again because I want to make sure I listen to it again, because I want to get a sense of the song, and like, yeah, this shit's been on repeat.
Listen to it on multiple kinds of speakers. There's a lot of different like audio things hidden in it that are really good, because Beck's really good at that.
So many sounds in it.
It even just has a, like, infectious like bridge hook thing, like da 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 da. That's yeah. really great. That's like also a Beck thing that I love that he does. It's just this like parting shot in the whole melodic chaos.
You need to play this in a car that has a sound system that you can fuck with the sound system, where you could like
yeah.
super change the levels and change the style of the levels and do that and listen to that song multiple times.
And then sit in the car, park somewhere, and sit in like the middle back seat yeah, if you've got that
right.
to get like the full experience, because usually when you sit in a car, you're driving
yeah,
most likely. You, or like yeah. either way where you're sitting, you're yeah. not sitting in the middle where you get to really get to experience yes. all the speakers hitting you at once. But yeah, from there, it's just like, wow, what a track. Then you get to See Through, which is okay, Hyperspace, which is features Terrell Hines, aka Pharrell Williams, who's producing yep. it. And really, it was a fairly inoffensive Beck track still. Like, it didn't feel too much like Pharrell. It had like a little bit of a twist to it, but
I mean, it was a little rest bleepy, so.
Yeah, but like, it didn't feel out of place for a Beck album. And
no,
that's one thing we said that Beck doesn't collaborate that much and hasn't on this album and still doesn't.
Does.
But it's, he's one of those rare examples where I might give him the Sean pass of, it's really hard / impossible for Beck to make bad music.
It is. I think after this album, he's got my stamp of approval of, he's one of those five artists I know off the top of my head that can make music that's just, you can't make bad music.
Yeah.
But you need to do the Damon Albarn back and like fuck off for about 4 years.
No, I think he's fine, because he fucked off for like 2 years in between Colors. I think Colors was recorded slowly and fairly
early.
Well,
the thing with Colors is that Colors, some of the songs were released, half the album was released in like 2015.
Which is why I think that some of it was recorded a little bit earlier, so Beck actually did have a little bit more time in between these two albums to do it. Because the first we kind of heard of this album of Beck's
hand
was earlier
sense.
This year, where Beck was like, I'm working on a new album, it comes out whenever the fuck it comes out.
Which I
remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it ended up coming out later this year, so I assume he started working on it mid to late 2018, mm-hmm. early 2019, which is good enough after Colors. And let's say like Drake releases music
quicker. Yeah, like Tory Maughan releases an album every 2 years usually.
Yeah. I think 2 years is fine if you're really good.
Yeah, if you're really good, exactly.
Yeah.
If you're Drake,
who just, thinks he's really good,
just
but
don't
actually
ever
really
make
hard.
Music ever really again stuck. And get and retire from the stage.
But I want to just kind of like really fast go through this, because like this album doesn't really get like old. I don't have like I like the first half more, like the second half more.
It's
no,
just,
it's great.
Also the thing, and I forgot to say this about Coldplay, too. Both these albums have a thing where every song fits together, because I've done this before on Audio Face, where if it's a band I really like or if it's an album I really like, to test it, I listen to it again. I usually listen to it three times, where I have it twice straight through and then I have one on shuffle to see if every song kind of matches a theme of the album work. And if you can do that while the songs aren't in order, that's a mark of a good artist. And both these albums do that, to where you can shuffle them and you have an entire theme of the album and it stays there, and it's incredibly hard to do. There's
yeah.
only very few works that do that.
Yeah, even through like the slower songs, and this is more of like
exactly.
Beck's upbeat album.
This is
like,
definitely upbeat compared. And but
even through the slower
like,
songs, it holds up. And then
yeah.
once you get to Dark Places, which is also like one of my favorite parts of the album.
This place.
It's just like, you know, the thing that's different from this Beck album than another Beck album is that it actually kind of feels like a little bit of that retro futurist flair almost that Beck is going for.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like most retro futurism feels like it's kind of digging into the 80s too much.
Like
this feels
like,
Yeah. This feels actually kind of like
actually the straight
it's exploratory. It's like Beck's take on it, but it's also exploratory. But it's not experimental as in like weird and outbeat, and you'll like think the drums are strange, but like it's stuff you usually hear, or you have to go into like the weirdest like crate digging of alternative to find it.
Yeah, this is definitely 2019. It's like, okay, you made a very different record, but it's good. It's quite good. So this is when two idiots decide to joust in two Cybertrucks, and they break all the windows on both Cybertrucks because they're like, Kia, bitch, because I've got nothing else better to do. And that's that, that's how many windows it is. So what is that, 12 windows?
This is a conservative MP in Parliament deciding to tear down two large London tower blocks, one with a Cybertruck on top of it and one with a Toyota pickup from the 1980s,
destroying it.
And not only the Toyota pickup truck actually drives out, the Tesla explodes because of the impact of the batteries. So the Tesla blows the fuck up, all the windows shatter.
Tesla flatbed.
Dude, there's no Tesla left, dude. Also, the biggest thing about Beck lore is that Beck is a Scientologist. I mean, like, the great thing about Beck is that he doesn't really talk about it that much.
He never does.
And he doesn't posture about it in his music. There's no, like, secret thing, at least that's what we think, in his music that, like, makes us, you know, into Scientologists or whatever. But he's definitely talked about it in the past, but currently claims he's not a Scientologist, which is really strange. He says, in the Sydney Morning Herald, an Australian newspaper, that I think there's a misconception that I am a Scientologist. I'm not a Scientologist. I don't have any connection or affiliation with it. But I've been pretty much focused on my music and my work for most of my life and tend to do my own thing. It's just something that people ran with. There's two little like asterisks I want to put here. The first one is that when the his ex-wife, Marissa Ribsey, is very like big in the Scientologist community and participates a lot. They split up earlier this year or like late last year. And so considering she's big in a lot of the Scientology events, Scientology is a very like closely connected but not that large religion. Maybe he kind of like has had enough of it.
Tax scheme, but
hashtag no religion politics. To be fair, earlier I said that like I like when people don't like, he doesn't talk about Scientology in his music. I just generally don't like music where they talk about religion, unless you're like saying this is gospel music. But I don't like the preachy shit like most of country. But this is all bullshit, by the way, because Beck has, at least in 2003, said that he's a Scientologist because his father was a Scientologist about 35 years and he grew around it and stuff. Like literally the quote is, quote, yeah, I'm a Scientologist. He also said that on MTV, makes me want to smoke crack, in 2003, that criticisms against Scientology were a kind of intolerance that he found insidious. Now, this is in 2003. I think more of this stuff is public now about like the evils of Scientology.
He probably got out of it, especially with his divorce with his wife, because that's what happens a lot when families are in Scientology and one person leaves. That's a one way, because like Scientology, you start ruining that person or try to ruin that person if they have a public marriage or something like that. That's one thing they do. So I'm actually, that makes a lot of sense. And wow, he's not everybody's favorite Scientologist anymore.
Yeah,
I can't say that anymore.
Former Scientologist.
There we go. That's what I got to say.
Everyone's favorite reformed Scientologist. I don't want to make that like a new religion or anything, but like he's a former Scientologist. Yeah, so that's a, my old little fun fact is gone, but yeah, that's
new. But good. I mean,
I'm personally applauding that you escape organized religion of any form. Anyways, we talked a little bit earlier about Taylor Swift and how her fans kind of went after the person going after that she's in dispute with over her releases and stuff and being able to play them. And that's kind of one way we've talked about doxing a lot with different artists. There's Taylor Swift. There is why am I blanking on her name? Lizzo.
Lizzo.
Why am I blanking on her name? Because I probably shouldn't be allowed to speak about that for a little while. But No Name is...
5 minutes for boarding.
No Name is implying that she's leaving music. And one of the things she's criticizing is really fucking unhealthy fandom, in her words. Kind of saying that, like, the really thing she's into is reading and organizing. She doesn't really care that much about...
But didn't she do, like, that whole book club thing?
Yeah, she's doing... Yeah, the book club thing. And she's saying that the relationship between artists and fans is really unhealthy. She said, quote, y'all like what y'all like, hate what y'all hate. I don't want to be on either side. I'm just trying to read and organize. After Factory Baby, it's peace. Deuces. Factory Baby's her next and second album. No Name is really great. She was like one of our top album. I think maybe even like a nominee. Or like one of the...
I think she was.
Like ending kind of like last runners up for the Audio Face Awards last year, which we will have again this year in December. Of course. And it'd be sad to see her go, but she's definitely not wrong about the...
Oh, no. Like, the music culture fucking sucks. And we've talked about that on the plethora on Audio Face. So, yeah, people suck. Pretty much.
Which is a recurring
theme. Which is a recurring theme of just, y'all as I said earlier for the Taylor Swift people, y'all need to chill.
Y'all are terrible.
Yeah. So, apparently Will.i.am claims... racism.
Calls a racism.
He claims there's a racist flight attendant called the police on him in Australia. Australia, mate.
That's a good one.
I've hung around a lot of Australians in my
also,
life.
Also, shout out to the koalas.
Shout out to
the koalas. Listen to the podcast.
Shout out to Qantas Air. Oh, it was on Qantas.
Yeah. No. Rip the koalas because they had a lot of bushfires in Australia, and koalas are now like they're basically extinct. They have a couple in captivity, like they have a decent amount in captivity to maybe sustain it. But like the bushfires did a number on koalas, man.
How the fuck do you spell koala?
K-O-A-L-A. Anyways, that was a dark turn. Black Eyed Peas, speaking of racism, the Black Eyed Peas frontman Will.i.am was on a Qantas Air flight. And the attendant called the police after him and his crew failed to put a laptop away near the end of a flight from Brisbane to Sydney. I think, so Will.i.am says he had noise-canceling headphones on and missed the announcement to put away all electronics, later putting his laptop away as soon as the flight attendant asked him directly. He said the flight attendant was beyond rude when calling on the police. So this seems like another case of, I'm a celebrity and I'm upset that I'm, like, mightily abused. Yeah. Because this isn't, like, I'm not gonna, like, calling the police is a little bit of, like, an overdoing.
Call the police.
Yeah. call the father. Okay. But yeah, I don't see this much of the racism in it. It's just like.
He's doing the I'm black card.
Just chill. Just chill, dude. Let's go to Labyrinth. Whatever.
Let's go to Labyrinth. So there's an album.
He released Imagination and the Misfit Kid. It's 15 songs long. It's also
it's
really 30 short.
Minutes. It is also short, so the Audio Face thing of keep it short and sweet.
Yeah.
There's a few people I want to make an hour length album. Coldplay is one of those people.
I didn't walk into this week thinking Coldplay was one of those people.
Coldplay can be.
And to be fair, like that, not to like accidentally keep re-reviewing the album again, but I don't want Coldplay to make another album that long again. That was kind of it was all fine. I can listen to it again, but like. Let's pull it back a little bit. Let's go to like 45.
But also, they usually take a while between albums.
Labyrinth. Imagination, the Misfit Kid, 15 songs, 38 minutes long. Labyrinth is he came out with a trio thing, Labyrinth C and Diplo LSD.
And it was like way too hypey typey for me.
Yeah, hypey typey electronic.
But I think that was more of Sia and Diplo, especially Diplo than anything, because this album's actually quite good.
Yeah,
because I didn't know what Labyrinth sound was, really, going into this. I didn't know, because on LSD, I'm like, okay, I don't know what part he made, what part he produced, whatever, what was his part of the album, because I didn't really like it. But this is fantastic for kind of a electronic pop-ish album. I don't know what you want to really call it.
Yeah, but I would say it's definitely in like...
That's what I would call it, but it's not... super mainstream electronic pop because there's
I wouldn't quite call it like Tori Moavisco wave. Maybe this could be like a
Tori Moavisco wave.
I wouldn't call this like a different we're gonna make it a genre, dude. But like this is definitely like closer to mainstream because to kind of give the game away, the parts I hated about this album the most were when it embraced the mainstream EDM.
Exactly.
So like Miracle is a song I basically have to skip through it like in the middle does the mainstream EDM thing. And a couple other songs kind of play around with it, but when they play around with it and everything else around the song is so much more instrumentally
great.
Depth has more depth. Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. Exactly.
It's a really nice touch. It's almost like an R&B, like a traditional R&B
like
take.
Misbehaving does that.
Yeah.
The second track.
Forgive my sins, I'm a a saint, God knows. About to throw some Hail Marys on them sweet bastards. Misbehaving, misbehaving. Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. Don't tell me yes, don't tell me.
After the little interlude, what's up with interludes today? Every all the three albums have a little.
I mean, like, you can't really call it an interlude when it's an intro.
Sorry,
it's
like interlude, intro, whatever you want to call that. But yeah, I had that same thing this album where all this the tracks I liked were ones that played with the EDM folly, but didn't stay constricted to get up, get down, get up, get down. They were just, the vocals were great. The production was good overall. Like Sexy MF was pretty funny.
Yeah,
that's a very funny song. I did like that song. It was a bit different where I had drum beats with the bass. It was a bit like kind of a little off key, but in a good way where you can mess with it and have a little more fun.
Say they're obsessive, yeah, I'm the one they possess with, eh, once they come they don't really wanna leave.
Where the Wild Things is also very good. I've actually usually now this is the thing where the top half or the bottom half thing, the bottom half of this album I like a lot because
yeah.
This is where it started to stray away from the normal chains of EDM and started to do its own thing and became its own album. It had its own sound to it.
Yeah.
So you basically did, from like the producer onwards or Something's Got to Give onwards about that time, fantastic. And even the song with Sia, Oblivion, the last track, was very good.
Yeah. I would have even said that All of Us, which All is a song from Euphoria,
actually,
is also
is
very
good. Yeah.
And Like a Movie is a song that plays with blues and EDM, mm-hmm. And it's really fucking good.
I haven't heard that. I wanted to get to that track. It's different, yeah. Very different. I've heard of little things like that where you go to like underground house circles, but nothing where it has, where it's complete as a song.
Yeah.
Like this before.
It's complete blues, but it's also like EDM.
It's cool. It's different.
It works
it's
really
fun.
Well. Yeah.
I like it.
It's definitely one of the, I compare this to, God, there was an album that I listened to last year. I'm forgetting the name. It escapes me. But there's like a small, like short couple songs in EDM that was like not too heavy on it. But it was just a really good short album that was not too, well, I mean heavy on it, was not too heavy on EDM. So it was like enjoyable. It wasn't
maybe
like
Zoo or no?
No, it wasn't Zoo. It was the album cover had like clouds on it. It was like kind of light.
I think I kind of vaguely know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a lot of electronic albums last year, especially. So
Rufus Du Sol, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah.
This is my version of that.
Rufus Du Sol, yeah.
Solace,
there we go. Because that album went hard with the sand dunes. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew it was like a slight colors on it. But yeah, this is my version of that this year. Where it's just like a really nice EDM inspired.
To where it gives me hope for people who make electronic music. Like, y'all are still out there that make good. I don't have to go to really weird underground clubs and see no regular play and shit like that. So,
Arbitrary Scale.
Yeah. This is double Elon throwing it twice in the same time. So this is four windows where Elon throws it once and there's another Elon on the other side because this is the fourth dimension. They break at the same time. They look at the crowd. They break the other one at the same time.
Yeah. Two mirrors still intact, the front and the back, or like the back mirror camera thing.
Yeah, exactly. The windshields are still intact, but you don't have any rolled down windows.
Yeah.
Like, that shit don't work.
And someone, like the same kind of person who parks their gas, like their diesel pickup truck and Tesla superchargers also put spray paint over the camera so you can't see over the back. So it's still kind of a ganked up car. But yeah, that's my version of it. Good album overall, enjoyable. Let's wrap up the show with some quick hits. So
the
Donald Trump ASAP Rocky thing, the plot is thickening because of this ongoing impeachment round two saga.
Yes.
So in the Donald Trump impeachment thing that's going on currently right now, investigating the Ukraine stuff, it has to do with the ambassador to the European Union, mm-hmm. Gordon Sondland, who is also intimately involved with the ASAP Rocky case.
Because that happened in Sweden, Sweden's part of EU.
Yeah, and this was happening all around the same time of like summer of 2019, supposedly. So apparently an ambassador spoke with Trump about a strategy, like a political strategy mm-hmm. around ASAP Rocky, saying that Trump should allow ASAP Rocky to be put in prison and tried in Sweden and put in jail in Sweden and then claim the racism card to get black votes. Which is like literally what people say. Like, no, he doesn't care about the black community because he's not actually doing any of these policies. His family will tout the opportunity zones, but it's really just an opportunity to give wealthy land developers even more money by gentrifying in poor locations, reform capitalism. And by reform capitalism, I mean destroy it and replace it with an economy that actually works, hashtag no politics. But, like, you can see that it's just, like, a political news scheme. It didn't work because, ultimately, Sweden has, like, half the justice system.
Yeah.
And they only try people for, like, a maximum. I think the death penalty there is actually, like, the maximum charge you get is, like, 33 years. And they give you, like, your cell gets a PlayStation.
Right.
So,
you get to build some IKEA furniture forever.
Basically, that's their community service. But yeah, that's
first
that's,
off, they people better start talking about that because that's pretty wild to say that shit. That's crazy.
I mean, it's like not surprising. It's just
it's not surprising at all. But it's just like,
to me, as someone who works in news and politics, I relate this kind of story as the kind of thing where like I look at it and the people who pay attention to this stuff look at it.
Like, great listeners of Audio
Face.
Of course.
Wait, listen. Like, it's the stuff that the great listeners of Audio Face like and enjoy. But it has the downside of, there's so much of this egregious shit that Trump does, like, it's going to be buried, and people actually aren't going to understand it. So, like, this is just one tag of, like, thousands, and I literally am not exaggerating, thousands of, like, cutthroat, dumb, like, unethical shit that Trump does. But it's just, like, welcome to the administration.
And then, I mean, look at Saudi Arabia.
Fucking vote Bernie Sanders. Let's get the story.
Wu-Tang. So they're getting their own amusement park in South Korea. That's fucking wild.
I'm so down. Like,
I want gunshots.
But I'm gonna go.
I want things going off in that theme park. I'm down.
Oh my god.
This
is gonna be really good.
Yeah. It's like, so.
So it's being developed in Seoul, yeah. South Korea. It was revealed by Jimmy Kang, the vice president of Wu-Tang Clan Management. Wu-Tang Financial.
Welcome to Wu-Tang Bank.
Kang, who immigrated from America to Korea, is spearheading the project. And so it's going to be around in a couple years, hopefully. Hopefully it goes through. I'm fucking down for
that's
it. I would travel to South
random,
Korea. It'd be a really fun, like, okay, if we do an Audio Face Patreon and maybe one of us starts selling our underwear online and we get a lot of money to travel to South Korea, we'll definitely do an episode from there.
Mm.
That'd be fun. And lastly, because...
always like to end Audio Face on a fun note.
Yes.
Go so, ahead? Hannibal Buress, he pretends to be MF Doom on stage during a Flying Lotuses set. The Adult Swim Festival.
Which is perfect for everyone involved, because, like...
This is hilarious.
Because, like, MF Doom almost notoriously never shows up to his own concerts, oftentimes sending doubles to, like, be at his concerts.
Yep.
So, people are used to imposter dooms, like, it's a whole thing that people are annoyed with.
Yep.
And, of course, like, a lot of times the imposter dooms are, like, half, like, cut-rate rappers, and the ones aren't even that good. Like, the ones that Doom even wouldn't have even opening for him, which is kind of annoying, honestly. The more annoying things about Doom. But... it's the most Adult Swim thing for that imposter to be Hannibal Buress. It's the most Hannibal Buress thing for that imposter to be Hannibal Buress.
Yeah, it is the most... That is beautiful on so many levels.
Yeah.
I would die.
I would be really upset to not have MF Doom there, but, like, that's the least upsetting thing. It's better than, like, sorry, MF Doom... not MF Doom, takes the mask off, Drake.
Oh, apparently they played accordion. Damn.
Everybody seemed to buy in until Flying Lotus paused his set, walked up to Buress, ripped off the mask, and said, "Get the fuck out of here. Hannibal, what are you doing here?" So I like
the most Adult Swim thing fucking ever. I've heard
that's fun, and it's fine.
That's just plain jokes at that point.
Because, like, everyone knows that about MF Doom.
Exactly, yeah.
Adult Swim has a good relationship with MF Doom. As far as we know, they did in the past. Maybe in the future it's not as good, but whatever.
Yeah, because they've definitely done like the various track shit with, and Doom's been on it.
Yes. This has been Audio Face. This is a ride of a podcast.
This has been episode 122. Lots of music, lots of opinions, lots of good music for you to check out. So if you want to check us out on all the socials, look at that plug. Go to Audio Face Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And my things at SW Sore has made them public for y'all again until y'all freak me out and then I go back to private.
Or I say something terrible.
Yeah. We know when he gets suspended by the league and gets fined $250,000 for spitting on players, then you know, then I gotta delete my shit. You can find him and yell at him all you want at Dan from the Internet on Instagram and Dan from the Web for, on Twitter. And go to find us on YouTube at youtube.audioface.show. I got it. There we go. That's the podcast. Bye. Hit the button.